Herzlichen Dank an dir, Shimon Kavosh, im Namen Christi.
So we'll just review a little bit. What's link number one? Blind man, who means ignorance, right? This is like your base ignorance that goes on from lifetime to lifetime. And then link number two? What's the picture?
Making pots,
which means specifically making fresh karma, right? Sanskara karma. Because of your ignorance, you do something. It doesn't matter what you do. Because of your ignorance, it's a karma. It's something based on a misperception. And it keeps you cycling around in the cycle of suffering. Number three? Yeah, the monkey mind. So it's a picture of a monkey. He looks like he's jumping off a house here into the river. But what does the monkey represent? The entering of your first moment of consciousness in this particular reality. So consciousness. Then the next one, we're on number four. To be on a boat means name and form, number one, right? Like your body and your mind. In the womb, sedication with it. Then number five is a picture of an empty house. Why is it empty? Well, what is it? It's your senses, right? But the house is dark still. Because we haven't gone to link number six yet, so it's the senses, but they haven't actually engaged in an object yet. So what's number six? The picture? Looks like more than kissing to me. But some of them, you get different versions of the real life. Sometimes it's just like a little peck, and sometimes... Yeah, but it's a picture of contact, and it means your sense power engaging with the object. And that's what we talked about last night. Alright, so this is the moment where the avidya that is underlying at all time actually activates. Is at the moment of what we call contact with the object. And actually, contact would be sort of a misnomer, because what we talked about before is that both the subject and the object are actually a single karmic seed ripening. Right? We looked at this glass. Remember the glass? This is actually, maybe we'll lose. Could use the glass. And we talked about, we just made contact with the object, right? And you have this perception that you're over there and the glass is over here and your eye is now making contact with some kind of object outside of you, and that it's totally separate from you. It actually existed in the temple before you walked in the temple. This glass actually existed. And the water existed somewhere else. And it had nothing to do with you. And that's a misperception. That's a avidya. Right? That's misknowing this object of the glass. In reality, this glass is actually a projection of your mind. It's a tiny little picture coming from your mind. It's a concept. It's a mental image, this glass. How do we know there's no glass here? Because not every being in the temple would see it as a glass. Like a glass that you can drink from, right? You look at it, you think, oh, this is a glass you can drink from. But, I don't know, today, I opened up my little bag that I keep Swamiji's notebook, Bhagavad Gita notebook in, and out popped the tiniest little lizard I've ever seen in my entire life. I showed it to Swamiji. It's like, it was like, I don't know, say the, as long as like the first part of the first, you know, this size. Yeah, the first part of the first digit here. And it was so thin, you could hardly see him. And he just popped right onto my hand and he sat there for most of the class and he popped right on at the end of class. I tried to take him back to his mother because I think he came from over there somewhere. But anyway, I was thinking about it. If he popped into this glass, he would probably think it was like some kind of nice swimming pool, right? That he doesn't have the perception of a glass of water the way that we have a perception of a glass of water. Like, not everybody who looks at this thing would see the same thing that you do. So that's one concept. You can say that the actual concept of glass of water, you know, that you can drink from, it's coming from your mind. And it's just this sort of green cylinder out there. It's like, what is the eye actually seeing, and what is the mind actually superimposing on what the eye sees? How much does the eye really see? How much does the eye really see? The eye maybe sees a cylinder. Maybe it sees like, I don't know, sort of like a trapezoid shape with maybe like a round shape on top of it, right? It doesn't even see a three-dimensional object. The eye is making the three-dimensional object appear out of like a simple trapezoid shape and a little like half circle shape on the top of it. Do you see that? And then you are superimposing upon the trapezoid shape, which is sort of like a rectangle, but a little thinner on the bottom, and the little circle shape on top, you are saying three-dimensional object, and on top of three-dimensional object, you are saying glass of water. So that's like two concepts that your mind is just throwing on top of this thing, on top of this rectangle and circle, basically. And then how does the mind even know that the rectangle and the circle is connected? How do you know that the circle on the top and the rectangle on the bottom are one single object? It's the mind that does that. It's the mind that connects the two. Because the eye can't know that. In fact, I mean, if you really want to go very far, the eye doesn't even see rectangle and it doesn't even see circle. So you go farther and farther and farther in your analysis of what the eye actually sees versus what the mind superimposes, and then eventually you come to the conclusion that the eye doesn't see anything, which is something Swamiji actually said today. The eye doesn't see anything. Every single thing that we see around us is a projection of our own mind. Every single thing. Every single color, every single shape, every single person. The whole world that we live in is an illusion. We think that there's objects that we interact with our five senses. You know, we think we hear things that are outside of us. We think we smell things. We think we touch things. In reality, both the object and the perception of the object, like your eye seeing it, it's coming from the same karmic seed inside of your heart. It's a ripening of one single seed. And it's, this is the point at which we sort of go astray. Because we see a division between ourselves and the object, because we don't see them as coming from us, then we get to go on to the next few links. So, what's the link after that? We did it last night. What's the picture? Yeah, it's like very excruciatingly painful looking one of the arrow in the god's eye, which means, yeah, it's like a representation of feeling. It's, so what happens right after we think we see something is we have a feeling about it. Either something feels good. It's very basic. This one is a very basic one. It's like it feels good, it feels bad, it doesn't feel either way. And like it happens in like a millisecond after you make contact with the object, is that there's a feeling, and you think that feeling is produced by that object. Like, how many people like the glass? I mean, how many people, does it feel good to look at the glass, you know what I mean? Like, how many people don't like the glass? It's just like, oh, Mama Christie's doing the glass again, it's so boring. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I don't like the glass. Put the glass away, Mama Christie. Then how many people don't really care about the glass? It's like, I see like most people in the room, they don't care. This is, I don't know, it has some sort of association to me. It looks really pretty. It looks kind of like the water. When I come to the Bahamas, it's like that cool greenish bluish water. And you have a good association or a bad association. So, you think that whatever feeling you have is coming from the glass. You think it's the glass that's making that feeling. In actuality, you think there's a cause-effect relationship between like the object and you. You know, like the object is causing something, when in actuality, like both the perception you are having in that present moment and the glass are coming from the same place. They're coming from a cause way, way in the past of whether you did something good to somebody or whether you did something bad to somebody. Maybe you offered lots of glasses of water. There's a few people who actually really like the glass. they might have offered lots of glasses of water in their past. Now the glass looks really beautiful. Or maybe they just offered something really beautiful because it's a visual. It's a visual pleasure, right? Maybe they're artists. Maybe they paint a lot. Who knows? We can ask them after a class. But nothing causes anything else in the present moment. Nothing. Nothing ever causes anything else in the present moment. Anything that you think is happening to cause something else in the present moment is a lie. It's an illusion. It's totally wrong. Everything that happens is caused by something that happened in the past. So then we go on to the next link of the wheel. And this is link number 8, which we called Tirshna. And this just means liking something. So you go from this basic feels good, feels bad, indifferent to I like it, or I don't like it, or I don't really care about it. But they usually call it liking. And it's a picture of a guy drinking beer. And right away from that, you know that you're in trouble. Because, I mean, there are two things that Buddhists say about drinking alcohol or taking drugs. One of them is that it lowers your ability to think clearly, so you are unable to keep your other vows. So that you end up breaking vows that you would normally not break if you were not under the influence of this other alcohol or drugs. So we consider it a very dangerous activity to put yourself in the position where you actually might do something that you really don't want to do. But then the second thing, which is even worse to me, I think, is that because it's one of those things that it dulls your mind and makes you stupid and produces seeds for making you stupid in the future. So you're actually, if you continue to like engage in activities like that, that make your mind stupid, you end up being a stupider person because you're planting constant seeds in your mind to see your mind like that, to see your mind in that dull and sort of stupid state. So, you know, if there's a guy drinking beer, you're in trouble, you know? And that's when you decide, I like that object. And then the very next step, 8 and 9 always go together, so we're going to do them together, is the next link in the wheel, which is there's a monkey, and he's taking a piece of fruit off a tree. This is a monkey again. And this one is, it means, I want it. I want it. So you go very, very quickly from, like, that object makes me feel good, to, I like that object, to, I want it. And it's like steadily increasing degrees of the same thing. Or, you know, that makes me feel really bad. Oh, I don't like it. I want to push it away from me. And it's the moment right before you actually do something. And it makes you do something out of ignorance. But it's all because of your misperception of the object itself, your misperception of where the objects in your world are coming from.
So I'm just gonna talk about aspirin a little bit more. I got a different one. These are chewables. We don't take much medicine, so when we take them, they kind of like knock us out completely. So we use kids aspirin. So I wanted to tell a story. I counted 31 years ago, His Holiness the Dalai Lama's senior tutor, his main teacher, came to our temple. It's as if he came to your other one. And you know, I was 26. And so we have to drive him from another ashram in New Jersey, which is about a 2.5 hour drive away, and then we thought he should come in a limousine, but we couldn't afford one. So the temple president had a new Lincoln, black big Lincoln, and these are Mongols. I lived in a Mongolian temple, and then he said we can use my car and Mike can drive, you know. So I'm okay. And we went out and practiced together, and that was the first time I ever ran a stoplight. And I was so nervous. And then they told me, Okay, his name is Captain Ling Rinpoche. They said Ling Rinpoche is very old, he's 80-something years old. He was very big, he was like Swami Shivananda. And then he was supposed to be Pairava. So they said, look, Mike, she gets a Shiva, but they have Pairava. They said, Mike, when he gets in the car, he'll get in the back, and you don't say anything to him, because he's Pairava. He's the Lord of Terror. He's the god of death. You know, don't even try to talk to him, you know, just drive. You know, so I'm all nervous and he came with his attendant and with, you know, Rata Rinpoche from New York, so, who was his disciple. And then, they put him in the front seat next to me. And then I'm like, what's going on? And they said, no, in India, the big person rides in the front. And not in the back, you know. So I'm really nervous, you know. And then, so we start driving, and then the two attendants, it's like Arjuna, like suddenly they fall asleep, both of them. You know, the cloud of moha or something. Suddenly they both fall asleep in the back. And then he looks at me, you know, and he says, how old are you, you know? And I was 26, but I was so scared I said 62. He asked me in Tibetan, right? So I said 62. And he goes, oh, you're going to live a long time. And I remember, and he just started like he was like a kid. And we had 2.5 hours, we had the most fun. And we were just like jabbering away and having a good time. Everything he would ask me, what's that? What's that? Explain what, because he'd never been outside of, you know. And then I remember we went by a graveyard, you know, and he said, so what's that? You know, and I said, that's a graveyard, you know. And he said, well, what do they do there? You know, and I said, when people die, they dig a hole and they put their body in there, you know. And he goes, oh, what a waste of good space. And then, we kept driving, and he got to the temple, and you know, and then he was really funny the whole time. I remember he kept asking me, turn on the air conditioning, you know? Like, I would turn it on, and then like 2 minutes later he'd say, turn it off, you know, and then he'd say, could you turn on the air conditioning? And I'd turn it on, and he'd say, turn it off, you know, and then he looked at me and said, you think I'm crazy, don't you, you know? And I said, no. And then I thought he was trying to tell me about human desires, you know? Like, we always too hot or too cold, you know? And then we got to our temple, our ashram, and he got out, and then he was going to give a teaching to our congregation, all the Mongolian people. So he got up on the big throne, and our temple had like fake flowers everywhere, because it was in New Jersey, nothing was. So we had a dish of fruit next to him, but it was all fake. And then he was giving this profound teaching, you know, and then he notices the fruit, and he's talking, and then his hand is going over to the bowl, and he's like feeling the fruit. And then, all these high lamas in the front are going like, and he's like, what? You know, and then he starts trying to take a grape off the. And he's still talking, but he's trying to pull it. He's trying to pull the grape off. And he's like really pulling on the grape. And then finally, my lama, you know, jumped up and went over and said, you know, it's fake, you know. I said, oh, okay, you know. And then, for me, everything was. I didn't know, those were the good old days when I actually believed in everything. I was like, oh, he's teaching us. What that? He's teaching us, you know? He's teaching us about what Swamiji said today about reality, what's real and what's not real. Right? And then I was thinking, because link number one is where you break it, right? Link number one is where you break the chain. So I was thinking about Swamiji today gave a beautiful talk about what's real and what's not real, right? So then, I'm going to take an aspirin now, okay? So these are these little light orange aspirins. They're good for swamis. They're for kids. You know? And I was thinking it's the same as the grape, okay? It's really the same as the grape. You have to think it's the same as the grape, okay? Meaning, Swamiji was talking about what's real and what's not real today. If you think the aspirin has something in it that can help you, if you believe that the power of the aspirin comes from a chemical or some molecules inside it, if you think that's where the power from the aspirin is coming from, you're wrong. You see? There's no ingredient in an aspirin that can help your pain. Take away headache. It cannot. And the proof again is that it doesn't work for everybody. And it doesn't even work for the same person on different days. We say if a thing doesn't repeat itself, if it can't perform its function consistently, then it's not the thing it's sold as. If you had a car and it worked only half the time, and someone said, you know, can I buy your car today? Or can you take me to NASA on the car today? You'd say, I don't know. You know, and they say, but it's not really a car then, you know, because a car's definition is, it gets you someplace. So if it can't get you someplace, if you have an object which cannot get you someplace, it's not a car. It can look like a car. Something you said today, you know, it has the appearance of a car. But if it doesn't work to get you to NASA, then it's not a car, right? It looks like a car, but it's not a car. So this looks like an aspirin. But you can say it's not an aspirin. Why? Because it's not a medicine. Why? Because it doesn't work. Why? Because medicine is defined as something that cures you of something and it doesn't. So it's not a medicine. It looks like it. It has the shape of a medicine. It has the feel of a medicine. It might taste like a medicine. But it doesn't work as a medicine. So it's not real. Okay? That's illusion. Everybody wants it. Everybody's talking about illusion in Buddhism and Hinduism also. We're always talking about illusion. People spend years trying to figure out what's illusion, you know? That's all. It's illusion. It looks like an aspirin, but it's not. Why? It doesn't work all the time, so it's not an aspirin. Okay? So then what I wanted to say was, it's what Lama Christie said. How do you interact with an illusion? You see, how do you get one illusion to do something to another illusion? You know, how can a pill which is not a pill help a person who's not a person? You see what I mean? Where do you get interaction between things that neither of them works? You see what I mean? That's what Lama Christie said. How can a pill in at 9:16 help Geshe Michael at 9:16 if they're both not there? You see? This is not an aspirin. And this bottle doesn't have any aspirin in it, okay? If you think there is, and we do, right? That's why I have it. I carry it around with me, right? I wouldn't have it in my luggage if I didn't think it worked, right? So you believe it works. That's a video, right? That's real ignorance. Is an aspirin. Thinking an aspirin is an aspirin is ignorance, okay? Thinking an aspirin can take away your headache is ignorance, okay? That you don't need any more fancier avidya definition than that. And we all day think things are going to work, right? And they don't. And then we get upset or we get hurt or we suffer. We think the car will work, the car doesn't work. We think the medicine will work, the food makes us sick instead of giving us health, you see? We don't know. That's a video, right? We don't know that the thing will work. We don't know. So then we are, the whole wheel, what Lama Krishna just described, every single link in the wheel, you are dealing with things that don't work. You are dealing with things that aren't even there. Got it? There's nothing in the bottle. There's nothing in this bottle. There's some orange round objects. But they don't work, because they don't always work. You see what I mean? They don't really work, okay? So then there's just nothing. The objects in the bottle are what Swamiji called unreal today. They are unreal, because they don't work. So how can you expect a thing that's not real to do anything for you? It never will, you see? And then all of the people you think you see in this room are the same. There are people in this room, and there are real people in this room. But as Swamiji said today, you're not seeing them. You're not seeing them. You're seeing the people who aren't here. No, really. You are focusing on a person. This person can make me happy. Or this person can teach me something. Or there's no such thing. What you hear us say is coming from you. Your past actions cause how you hear us. We aren't just making sounds. And then you are hearing a good thing or a bad thing or a boring thing or an interesting thing, or it's all up to you. We are providing round tablets. Whether they do anything is coming from you. You see? So in every part of the wheel, in all of the 9 steps we've done so far, you're dealing with things that don't exist. And then you're trying to get them to do things to each other. You see what I mean? You're trying to get something that doesn't do anything to make an effect on something else that doesn't do anything. You're pushing around fake grapes. You're just pushing around fake grapes, you see? Neither one of them works. And then there's the really sad thing, right? You have one of your fake grapes, right? And then you're going to do a mitzvah or a chet, right? You're going to do a good deed or a bad deed. You're going to do a shukla or a krishna karma. You're going to do a good deed or... You're going to make a good karma or a bad karma, right? Oh, I'm so nice, Lama Christi. I only have one aspirin left. I know you have a headache. I'm going to give you the aspirin. You see? Like, it's like offering someone a fake grape. Okay? It's the same. No, you laugh. You laugh, but you do it all day. All day long. You are dealing in fake goods. You know, all day long. If you keep it and you don't give it to her, it's selfishness. It's a bad karma, right? You're keeping a fake grape for yourself. You see? Or you think you're being nice. It's what Swamiji spoke all about. That's why I got the idea. You got it at 2 a.m. I got it in the middle of your class. You know? It's a blessing, right? Of the class, of the teacher, right? So then, or I can give her the fake grade, right? But you see, what's planted then? What kind of sanskara? If I believe in the aspirin, if I believe there's something in the aspirin, but there's not, right? Then I have a vidya, right? And I offer Lama Christi the aspirin. Do I make a karma? Yeah. Do I make a good karma or a bad karma? Good. It's a good karma. I want to help her. I'm not keeping it for... If I kept it for myself, what do I make? It's a bad karma. And either one will cause suffering. We had a talk today, Shankarji and I. You know, either one will cause pain. Okay? They will both cause pain. If I give her a fake grape out of kindness, and they're all fake grapes, everything you ever did for anything, anybody in this life, you were dealing with fake grapes. And that corrupts the karma. It does something bad to the karma. Then the karma will wear out. If it's a good karma, all you'll get is fake grapes back. And they will end. It's what Swamiji said. You'll wake up from the second dream. You see what I mean? They will end. You are dealing in things that don't really work. It's like, I give you a fire extinguisher for your house, but it doesn't have any water in it. You know? It doesn't work. Thanks. You know? Like that. And then when I really need it, I'll pull the trigger and nothing will happen. You know? Now my house will burn down. Like that. your all the kindnesses you've ever done were done with ignorance. And they created samskara, and that spins the wheel. That caused the wheel spinning again. Last question. When I give her a fake grape, when I give her an aspirin that doesn't work, okay? I'm not even going to give it to you because I don't want the karma. The bad karma. There's two karmas are collected. Two samskaras are collected. Okay? And Lama Christine mentioned it. When I give her an aspirin that I believe works, but it doesn't work, okay? When I give it to her, we call it a good dirty karma. In Buddhism, we call it a good dirty karma. There's bad dirty karmas and good dirty karmas, and then there's pure karmas. Vimala, Nirmala, karmas. That's a dirty karma. And we'll talk about dirty karmas some other time, but they wear out. They wear out. Okay? So when I give her the fake grape, with a good intention, with a good heart, then some nice things will happen to me. They will wear out. They will finish. I will get 3 ice creams, and then I'll wake up, you know, like that. Something will happen. I'll get something back. But there's another seed planted when I hand her the aspirin, which is what? Another seed for ignorance. Another samskara for avidya. You see? The habit of offering an aspirin that doesn't work. The intention is a pure thing. What we call dushya, or the recognition of what you're giving, is a negative thing. As you hand the aspirin over, you are believing that it has something in it that works. And you are planting another seed in yourself to have more ignorance later. Got it? Where do you think all this ignorance came from? It has its own samskaras. The habit of misunderstanding the aspirin continues because you did something nice with the wrong idea about the aspirin. You see? So two things are happening. I will get aspirin back that doesn't work all the time. Someone will offer me 3 aspirins that don't work all the time. But the other karma is that I will misunderstand things again and more. You know? One incident of misunderstanding an aspirin creates 3 or 10 or 1,000 in the future for me. I'm planting a very terrible, terrible seed in my heart. Okay? Okay, now I have to go through 10 links in 1 minute. Okay? So again, I'm obsessed by the, you want me to go to 10 or 11, I'm just stuck on 1 and 2. You know, for me, that's so vital that you understand. Understand why even good deeds don't bring the results you expect, right? That's, some people, I give talks, you know, to business people, I say, be generous. And they are generous. They try it. I say, look, I made $250 million doing this. $250 million company. Then just try it. And they try it, and nothing happens. You know, and they say, you didn't teach me right, you know. Something was wrong with your presentation. I say, no, you don't understand what, you misunderstanding the money that I asked you to give away. You don't understand the money that I asked you to give away. You're not giving away money. You're giving away something unreal. It doesn't even exist what you're giving away. You think you're giving something that doesn't even exist. People say, I help sick people all the time, and my health is bad. You're helping sick people that don't even exist. So, duh. So it doesn't create a big karma bad. You see what I mean? If you don't understand the people that you're serving, the karma is almost nothing. And you will be sick, and you will get old, and you will die, and you'll be in the wheel. And you'll have small, pleasant experiences. You'll have a good yoga class from Swamiji if you're lucky, if he shows up on the right day. Okay? Like that. All right? You must understand what you're doing, or what you do causes pain. Even if it's a good action.
So if if both good deeds and bad deeds are planting negative karmic seeds in our minds, why do we have to do good deeds? I mean, why does it matter what deeds we do? I mean, because that's, see, there's like a danger of misunderstanding this teaching, and I think I should bring it up at this point, because I feel like for people who have just walked into this temple and never heard this before, there could be a danger. Maybe you leave tomorrow and you say, oh, Geshe Michael said, doesn't matter whether I do good deeds or bad deeds, you know? The reason that we continue to try and do good deeds, even though they are just plastic grapes, is that it serves to calm the mind so that we can understand the teachings of wisdom more clearly. So, yes, the person that you are serving who's sick doesn't exist, and you're not actually doing anything for somebody else. You are actually doing something for yourself at that moment. You are, right now, we've got this mind, and it's like a wavy ocean, this really big wavy ocean, because we've got all these disturbances from all the bad things we've done to other people. And then it's like, you can't see straight to the bottom because there's so many waves in the way. It's like if it's really windy day here, you go outside and you look down and you can't see the seashells on the sands, even though the water is clear, because there's too many waves. And that's the same with our mind. If we go through our day being bad to other people, then we cause a lot of waves in the mind. And so we want to be able to still that water so that we can look to the bottom and see the truth underneath. So even if we just have a very basic grasp of what Geshe Michael or myself was talking about in terms of reality, and then you go out from this temple and you forget all about it, still you have to continue to do like karma yoga, basically, so that you can be, what Swamiji likes to say, is eligible for the path of wisdom. If you're at a point now, for instance, where you are finding these teachings a little bit over your head, or you're not quite sure what everybody means when they say the aspirin, there's no aspirin in that bottle, or everything is just a projection, it means you need to do more good, so that you can calm the mind, so that you can actually start to understand that better. And that's why there are steps of the process of these teachings. So, once you do understand these teachings, you start to behave in a drastically different way, perhaps, than normal beings. In fact, you actually start to look kind of strange. There's a story of this very famous lama named the first Panchen Lama. And the Panchen Lama and the Dalai Lama are kind of like, whenever the Dalai Lama is too young, then the Panchen Lama steps up and sort of runs things, and they sort of stagger that way. So the Panchen Lama is like the second in charge of, you know, all of Tibetan Buddhism. And the very first of all of the lineages of lamas, they're always like really good, because that's why they continue later. That's why we've got this, you know, the 16th Dalai Lama, because the first one was really good. So the first Panchen Lama was really, he was very, he created a, I don't know, every great lama comes and transforms the teachings in a subtle way when things start to degenerate, you know, and they come and they re-instill life into the teachings and then into the people, and that's what he did. And there's this great story. In Tibet in the old days, there used to be different schools of Buddhism, and they actually used to fight with each other physically with like weapons and stuff. They would attack each other's monasteries. It's hard to imagine, you know, it would be like us like going over the river and attacking ashram because we think you should be Buddhist or something. I mean, it's crazy. It's like, I just can't imagine this, but that's what it used to be like there. You know, people thought that others should convert to their way of thinking, and if they didn't do it peacefully, they were going to do it violently. And so there was this war that started to happen between two different schools of Buddhism, and the first Panchen Lama wanted to stop it. And so what did he do? He went into a deep solitary retreat, and he worked on the violence in his own heart, and he worked on purifying it. And that's strange. According to the theory of the world, how is that ever going to stop the war? How would that ever stop the war? But if you understand that the whole war is coming from your own mind, that's the only thing that you can do to stop the war. So then he gets out of this month-long retreat, and he's been doing all this practice of purification, and the war is just about to start, and they're actually on the battlefield. It's another battlefield. And they're like about to engage with each other, and he goes right into the middle of the battlefield and stands there, one lonely guy amongst entire armies of people, and he stops the war. And it reminds me a lot of what Swami Vishnu always did. But it's not that we could just take a plane and fly into a war zone and we would be able to do the same thing, because it didn't come from that. It came from what he understood about his reality, and it came from the work that he did on his own heart. Because he understood the nature of reality, he had the power to manipulate reality. And the first Panchen Lama did it, and Swami Vishnu did it, and you can do it. You can learn to do it. But you have to get this thing about projections and emptiness, and you have to understand that it's not really a cup out here, and it's not really aspirin out here. And then you can do really, really powerful things to change the world. And then you have no more fear.
Yeah, she scared me. I want to show you how to do a good deed. I forgot. Okay, I thought we were talking about giving away fake grapes, right? But I better tell you how to give away a real grape. Or else you go home and you don't want to do anything, right? You'd probably just sleep, I guess. So how to do a true act? How to do an act without avidya, you see? Because if we don't cover that, then it's not really fair, right? We just destroy everything you believe and leave you like that. You know? It's not fair.
No.
Sometimes I've been accused of that. By my lamas. So when you teach people about that an aspirin doesn't work, you better teach them how it does work, or it's not very fair, you know. So none of the things we do, as Ramakrishna said, in the present moment works, okay? I'll show you how to make an aspirin work, just basically, alright? Something beautiful, okay? If you try to take an aspirin because you have a headache, and you misunderstand the aspirin. Somebody tell me what it means to misunderstand the aspirin. That's avidya. I call avidya misunderstanding. Somebody tell me what it is to misunderstand the aspirin. Anybody?
There's something in the aspirin.
Yeah, you think there's something inside the aspirin that will help you. You believe that. You really believe that. When you reach out to turn on the light, you believe that there's something, some electricity is going to move from the light, from the switch to the light. You believe that. But when you turn the key of a car, you believe that the battery is causing the car to start and not your good deeds. Got it? So that gives you a clue about how to take an aspirin. Alright? If you believe the aspirin has something in it that will help you, and then you, a chemical, and then you take it, your headache might, I don't have to tell you, your headache might go away, and it might not go away. Okay? So how to take an aspirin properly? Okay? Without a vidya. And it doesn't cause the wheel. How do you break the wheel? How do you take an aspirin and break link number one at the same time?
Okay? Knowledge.
Yeah, knowledge. Vidya. Vidya, knowledge. Okay? So how? What would it mean in the case of an aspirin? Okay? I'll just run it by you. Okay? You look at the aspirin before you take it. And you can visualize an energy flowing into the aspirin from someplace else. It's not in the aspirin, okay? There's nothing in the aspirin that can take away your headache. You look at the aspirin, and I like to visualize like a tiny little door, like the size of a needle, is opening on the other side of the aspirin from some other realm, from some other dimension, right? And then I visualize the power from that dimension flowing into the aspirin. There's a realm which is kind of like colorless light, okay? It's like a realm of colorless light. And it's on the other side of the aspirin. And there's a tiny pinhole opening from that realm into the back of the aspirin, okay? What's in that other realm? In the other realm are all the kindnesses I have done in my life. All the kindnesses I have done for others. You know, and we don't do that many, consciously, you know? All the food I served at the ashram, all the toilets I cleaned, you know, all the times I tried to explain to someone in the TTC what was going on, you know? All the good things, all the awesomeness I tried to assist someone. You imagine, just before you take the aspirin, you imagine that the power of those deeds is flowing into the aspirin, okay? Because that's the active ingredient, and that's the only thing that can make the aspirin work. There is nothing else which can make the aspirin work, okay? There is nothing else that makes aspirin work, except the kindness that you've done to others. So try to think of some kindness that you've done to someone. See that any power in the aspirin that it comes to have is from the kindness you've shown to others in the past. Okay? And then take the aspirin. You see? If you don't have much kindnesses to draw on, then it may not. Oh, by the way, the aspirin that you perceived at that moment, right? The aspirin which has the power of kindness flowing into it, that's real. That's the first real aspirin you ever saw. The rest were all, what do you call it? Plastic grapes. The rest were all, Swamiji was talking about real and unreal today. If you perceive the aspirin, that its power is being drawn from all the goodness you have done towards others, even plastic grape goodness, okay? That's okay. If you think of the aspirin, that its power is coming from kindness to others that you have done, Then you're seeing a real aspirin. Then that's an aspirin. Okay? Then you can take it and you're not creating more avidya. Got it? That would be the first, what we call pure action you've ever done. I believe, when we taught the Gita, we're doing a trick on Swamiji. We asked him to teach the Gita so we could teach the Gita. So we come from here and in the fall we always go and teach whatever he taught in New York. You know, and we act like it's our own idea usually. no, we always confess. But anyway, that will be the first real aspirin you ever took. And what I think the Gita is about, I mean for us, what the Gita is about is how do you do something? How do you take an action that's true? You see, Arjuna's big challenge for Arjuna is, it's not whether he decides to fight or doesn't fight. That's not the point. The point is it possible to do a pure action? And what does it mean to do a pure action? And for an aspirin, it means that you look at the aspirin and you think, whatever power, this aspirin doesn't have any power. If I have goodness, if I have done goodness to others, the aspirin will work. Then take the aspirin. And you have done a non-samsaric action. You have done a true action. I just feel the whole Gita, the story of the whole Gita is about how you do something. Because every action you ever took in your life was based on plastic grapes. And that's why it didn't work. It can't work. Because you're dealing with stuff that's not real. You're trying to take an aspirin that's not real. And you're trying to drive a car that's not real. So Geshe Michael, what is a real aspirin? It looks the same. It feels the same. It comes in the same bottle. Okay? But it has a power in it that came from your goodness towards others. It came from kindness towards others. You see? That's why our car starts. That's why the light goes on. Okay? It's the kindness you've done towards others. Even kindness that you didn't really understand so much. That's okay. Last thing. What happens if you do a kindness with knowledge? What if you give the aspirin to Lao Christian and say, look, before you take it, do me a favor. Just walk around the ashram. If you see someone who's unhappy or looks sad, spend 10 minutes with them. And just try to help them out a little bit. Then take the aspirin. You see? Then I'm giving her a real aspirin. You see? If I don't say anything and I hand her an aspirin and say, take that if you have a headache, I'm not helping her. I'm not giving her anything. It's a plastic grape. Okay? But if I say, Lama Christy, just before you take it, try to find someone in the ashram who's unhappy or having a hard day and comfort them. And then take the aspirin later on that day, because that's the active ingredient in the aspirin. Okay? In the case of money, giving away money, if you give away with that understanding, the karma created is infinitely higher, infinitely greater, you know? If in the case of helping the sick, if you do it with this knowledge, then the effect on you is infinitely greater if you want to teach and help people. But you teach them this first, and then you teach them what you will have to teach them. It's infinitely greater action, and it's no longer samskara. It's no longer in the wheel. It's out of the wheel. And actions done with plastic grapes can only result in very weak results, inconsistent results, a world where stuff works or doesn't work, or sometimes works, or relationships that work and sometimes don't work. All actions done without the understanding of kindness have inconsistent and weak results. Put a little bit of vidya into that. Understand the aspirin even slightly, and your world changes radically. Your world changes into it. We call mandala. Mandala means a paradise. Mandala means a world where everything works, all the time. Everything. Every time you take an aspirin, your head goes away. You know, every time you try to talk to your friend who was upset yesterday, they get happy. Like that. Every time you write a letter to your congressman about Iraq, they stop the war. Really, really. You see, if you get in the habit of doing an action which is done with knowledge, then profound effects on your world. Impossible things happen. And inside, deep, deep feeling of happiness, joy. What you call what Swamiji was calling ananda, real joy. Unending joy. Joy without a second. You know, joy without the corresponding suffering. You know, the result of an action done with knowledge cancels all the useless actions before, and suddenly everything in the world works right. And that's on the outside. Inside, you have this extraordinary feeling of joy all the time. Almost all the time you feel this extraordinary feeling of happiness. And isn't that why we're here? Isn't that why we're here? Anyway. I mean, by the way, you can stop death in this world, okay? That's also okay. Alright, but learn to do an action. I think that's what the Gita is all about. How do you, Lord Krishna is trying to tell Arjuna how to do something. He's not telling him what to do, right? He's not saying fight or don't fight. He's saying learn to do a pure action that is real, with objects that are real, you know, and something powerful. The effect on your life and your world is indescribable. And you just, your own happiness is, and the happiness of those around you is indescribable. Okay, alright, yep.
I just have to say that there's a direct connection between grasping to a self of something and your own selfishness. And usually when we go to give these kind of talks to places, it's very difficult to even talk about the subject of projection and emptiness and ultimate reality. But here it's so easy for people to have some kind of understanding immediately and grasp of it. I'm sure one is because you have such an amazing holy lama. But I think this is one of the places in the world where I feel people are the least selfish. You know, I come here and people, they're so kind and they want to, everybody wants to help and everybody has so much love in their hearts. And it's like, it's such an easy jump from that to understanding wisdom, to having wisdom in your heart. So you guys are very lucky here to be in that environment, even if you're only here for